You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
So, friends, it is so good to be back with you. I've missed you very much. I don't know if you know this, but I moved back to Minnesota permanently. So when David called me and said, "I'm doing a wedding in Texas, will you come and preach for me?" I said, "Yes!" It's wonderful to be with you. So before we begin today, I want to give you a little bit of background information to shape today's passage. In 1945, a farmer in Nagamati, Egypt, found a pottery jar containing over 50 papyrus documents, many of them bound together as books. Written in the Coptic language, they became known as the Nagamati Library. The most famous of these books is the Gospel of Thomas. While the Gospel of Thomas didn't make the cut into the canon in the New Testament with Mark and Matthew and Luke and John, it's come to be embraced by those who study this kind of thing as a document on par with those Gospels. Thomas is different, however, because it's what's called a sayings gospel. There's no narrative of the life of Jesus, but rather a collection of sayings and short dialogues attributed to Jesus. No messianic claims, no crucifixion, no resurrection, no final judgment, just advice on how to live. So what we have here is a witness to the existence of very early Jesus followers for whom Jesus' death and resurrection were not important. What is emphasized is Jesus' teaching. So hear these words of wisdom from the Gospel of Thomas.
Jesus said, "If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Pray with me, please. Gracious Spirit, we are so grateful for these words of wisdom that come to us from so long ago. May we hear them anew. May we find in them meaning and relevance in our lives today. May they stir us deeply so that none of us leaves this place unchanged. Amen. It was March of 2003, and it was cold in Annandale, Minnesota. The heater in my car was working overtime as I drove to the grocery store on the main county road that runs through our community. As I approached the downtown area, traffic slowed considerably at the Veterans Memorial Park on the south side of the road. Two small groups stood about 40 yards apart, both carrying signs and shouting toward passing cars. My windows were up. I could not hear their words. The first group included three Franciscan sisters and two others, their signs reading, "No war in Iraq" and "Don't attack Iraq." The second group included three men and a young boy, their signs all read, "Bomb Iraq." As I slowly passed this local display of activism, I noticed that both groups were yelling at passing cars, and their faces were angry and drawn tightly. Their brows were furrowed. Both groups held their signs aloft and pumped their arms in rhythm with their shouts, very passionate about their message. Both groups avoided each other. There was no eye contact, nor was there any dialogue. Had their signs not had different words, they would have been indistinguishable. We live in interesting times. In a constant, media-fueled, noisy, divisive, elevated, polarizing, blaming, demonizing sea of messages where solutions are not at all the objective and common ground is elusive. This is what's known as the red zone of agitation. Focused only on our fears, relationships suffer and friendships are cut short with the click of a button. Self-sorting occurs. Cynicism and polarization deepens. This presents us as followers of Jesus with a predicament. Story after story about Jesus challenges us to love, to look beyond cultural and socioeconomic boundaries, and to welcome, to engage, to be in relationship where possible with the other, to see and to respond. Jesus' first century call to bring forth that which is within us. This is no small thing, and it's at the heart of our important work, the work of our times. In today's passage, Jesus encourages us to bring forth that which is within us, that it might save us. When we are most resourceful, we are fully present and able to listen to Jesus' call. I believe that is what Jesus is asking us to do, to bring forth our best selves. We can embody Jesus' example of radical inclusivity, not isolated and fearful of the world, but in relationship. Jesus was in relationship not simply with his followers, people who agreed with him, but with everyone, with the least and the last, with those society demeaned and dismissed, in sustained relationships and in dialogue. That's where stereotypes crumble and labels fall away. Subtleties, texture, and nuance, that's where that's found. Story after story of Jesus' life challenges us to look beyond cultural boundaries and to welcome, engage, touch, and respond. Many of us feel compelled today to respond in some way to the growing climate of us and them, of closing doors and limiting possibilities, of winning with little regard for the many who lose, and denying human dignity. The question becomes, how do we respond in a meaningful way, an effective way? How do we bring forth that which is within us, our most resourceful selves, our most loving selves, and advocate and find solutions, not simply add to and fuel the anger and the mistrust? Big challenges called for defiantly big-hearted, thoughtful, engaged, and resourceful people, mindfully bringing forth our best selves, working each day to find inner balance. This is where important work begins. If we do not begin the work of balance or equanimity and self-care, we're simply puppets of external forces designed to keep us afraid and disempowered and polarized and distracted. So how on earth do we find balance? How do we remain empowered and focused on Jesus' examples of inclusivity and value for all people? First, come back to your body. Climb out of that cramped space in the mind where we currently live much of our lives. I don't know if you can relate to that. Thoughts race. We just spend a lot of time up in here, living in a sea of data and information which recklessly reigns without limits or boundaries. That noise. We often dismiss the body as that which simply carries around the head. But when we are fully present, our mind, our body, our breath, and our spirit in this moment, we are most resourceful. Second, calm your mind. The cross-generational scourge of our times is racing thoughts, unharnessed fears which spin and spin as the disasters of the day parade through our consciousness on a constant, highly manipulative loop without ceasing. In this fear and stress-drenched way of living, the body responds, and it's not pretty. Important research in the field of meditation and mindfulness and neuroscience reveals the importance of cultivating the skills to de-stress, to cool down, to dial back, to defrazzle, to breathe, and to come into this moment, not in the past, not in some yet-to-be-defined future, but right here now. Our greatest resources are in this moment, right here, present. And this begins when we are mentally and physically present, engaged, but consciously unplugged from the noise. Unplugged, but engaged. Unplugged, but engaged. Connected to each other. Third, make room for mystery. Is it okay not to know today? To ponder? There is nothing which we cannot know immediately. If today's solutions to today's challenges are only up to our gray matter, tissues, and fluids, or to Google, then we are in big trouble. We need each other, and we need something larger, something infinite, something mysterious, with which to collaborate and co-create. If we're to come back to our bodies, calm our minds, and make room for mystery, where do we begin? We begin by mindfully unplugging for a period of time each day, and in so valuing and tending our mental hygiene. Our mental hygiene. This in itself is a radical act today, to unplug for a period of time. We find ourselves not even one full generation into a new world where highly edited and crafted content comes to us at all times of the day or night. And it causes us to be collectively anxious. In a steady parade of oversimplified messages, we are anxious and our body responds. Our thoughts race. Our vision changes, the mouth becomes dry, the heart beats faster, we feel nausea and butterflies in the stomach, the hands get cold, the muscles tense, we feel dizzy and lightheaded, the breath becomes shallower, the adrenal glands release adrenaline. There's urgency in the bladder and the palms are sweaty. Sounds like fun, huh? When we're anxious, the fight-flight mechanism in the brain, it engages. And the brain does not work well. When we are afraid, when we are stressed out, rational thought and contemplation are inaccessible to us. The neural pathways in the brain narrow, and anything passes for truth. As we are drawn deeply into the shiny object, travesty of the day, perpetual noise, we become increasingly intolerant for detailed, longer, thoughtful messages and analysis. Skimming, 144 characters. Life becomes simplified and self-sorting takes place, only to align with those things that challenge us the least. Today's world needs thoughtful people who are both engaged and unplugged. Now, step two. Step one was unplugged. Step two, breathing. Breath is the most accessible tool for quieting the mind and the body. It's amazing what we can do without breathing deeply. But we're not effective. Sitting quietly for even 2 to 3 minutes opens neural pathways for calm, body and mind. And then to mystery and contemplation. One day I was with my mother, and she asked me a question. Out came my phone, and tap, tap, tap went my finger to Google. Within 20 seconds, I had a plethora of answers. My mother said, "How powerful you must feel. There's nothing your generation cannot know." But did I know? I think not. Instead, I raced to answer a question with someone else's answers, selecting the option that challenged me the least. When was the last time I instilled a grain of sand in the oyster of my inner wisdom and awaited a pearl? When did I default to selecting something from the discount data buffet and shimming up my life to make it all fit? What if we pondered a bit more? And invited mystery into our pondering. How would that change the answers we glean and the questions we live and ultimately the course of our actions? And then there's Jesus. Oy, always with that troublesome Jesus. story after story of Jesus welcoming the stranger, feeding the hungry, dining with the outcast, talking with those demonized and diminished by the world, crossing racial, gender, and religious boundaries, welcoming children, breaking down societal barriers, speaking out against authority. As followers of Jesus, we find ourselves in a bit of a pickle. In order to hold fast to a one-dimensional, fear-saturated view of the world, the worst view of humanity, and wall building, we have to ignore the call of Jesus. Troublesome. This brings us to our stream of thought today. Bring it. Bring it. How do we reconcile Jesus' call of inclusivity and abundant loud message with abundant loud messages of hate and fear and exclusion? Seems to be me, we need to pick up one and maybe set one down. How do we hold them both? This question is not for the timid, and it requires a bit of swimming upstream. Can we turn our obsessive gaze from the constant parade of the worst behavior and the most divisive rhetoric? Can we bring our best selves forth? Do our words and actions contribute to the demonizing and the anger and the division? Or do they speak differently and actively seek connection, wisdom, and solutions? Our passage from the Gospel of Thomas equates our ability to bring forth that which is within us with our very survival. Not to do so is also to our demise. Several years ago, author Elizabeth Gilbert traveled to a small island in Bali to heal from a broken marriage. She rented a small shack and was determined to hide from the world as she licked her wounds. Each day she walked around the small island, once in the morning and again in the evening, her eyes cast downward, tears wetting her cheeks. On the fourth day, a woman she had passed daily waved to her, and Elizabeth waved back. This became part of her twice daily routine, walking and crying and waving. Several days later, Elizabeth Gilbert became quite ill and did not walk the island, laying limp and weak in her rented hut. She tells the rest of the story this way. That evening after sundown, there was a knock at the door. On trembling legs, I walked and opened it. It was the woman from the other side of the island. She didn't speak English, and I don't speak Bahasa. But it was clear that she was checking in on me and that she was worried. When she saw my condition, she put up a finger that simply said, "Wait." Less than an hour later, she was back with a plate of rice, some chopped up herbs, and a jug of fresh water. She came into my shack and sat beside my bed while I ate every bit of this healing food, and I started to cry. She put her arms around me, and I folded myself into her as if she were my mother, even though she were almost my same age. She stayed with me for an hour until I was composed. We didn't say a word. She just sat with me, her arms around me, as if to say, "I see you. I will stay with you. I will make sure you are safe." This stranger had come to find me because she noticed that I'd missed both my morning and my evening walks. She took it upon herself to look after me. She, who had so little to share, made me her responsibility and took the risk of reaching out. The distance that I had traveled was vast, 10,000 miles from my home, but the distance that she traveled was vaster, all the way across the island to knock on a stranger's door. And the kindness of her actions opened my heart to important lessons. See others and allow yourself to be seen. Help others and allow yourself to be helped. Make contact and be open to kindness. This occurred almost 1 year to the day after September 11th, 2001, when the land of the brave became the land of the very anxious, retreating inside our own individual panic rooms and locking the doors behind us, not welcoming anyone unknown into our midst or reaching out to the stranger. Elizabeth Gilbert concludes, "I am not afraid of the world. I am afraid, however, of people who are afraid of the world. Terrified people make terrible decisions. I want to live in a society filled with people who are curious and concerned about each other rather than afraid of each other. I want to live in a world of brave people who will risk emotional intimacy. I want to live in a world of explorers and generous souls rather than people who have voluntarily become prisoners in their own fortresses. I want to live in a world of people who look into each other's faces along the path of life and ask, 'Who are you, my friend? And how can we serve each other?'" Friends, the world needs people who can bring forth that which is within them, their best selves, who are reaching out and building relationships where there has been discord, who remain in meaningful, sustained dialogue and direct eye contact where there is still a sliver of light and possibility. We can hold the space for learning and amending our thoughts for the greatest good. Jesus encourages us to bring forth that which is within us that it might save us, and this is our call and our challenge. So bring forth your best self, and I shall endeavor to do the same. Bring it, my friends. Bring it. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.